Justin, what are we doing for the first time ever?
For the first time in all history, an intentional fatherhood retreat is happening.
And it's happening in Costa Mesa, February 19th through 21st. And the coolest part about this is that you're all invited. Every single father and man you know, invite them out. It's going to be a great time. What can people expect?
It is going to be fun.
Yes.
First of all, there's going to be a ton of talks and teaching on spiritual and physical formation and fatherhood. Sir. We're going to do curated times to hang out with other dads who are seeking Jesus, just like you are. And honestly, it's just a chance to get away, which is one of the things that is the most important for dads in this stage of life, to get away and reflect on where life is headed and how they're walking with Jesus in it.
Yes. Couldn't have said it better. So join us in Costa Mesa, California, February 19th through 21st, and check out early bird pricing. That's a big deal. It's happening right now. Go to intentionalfatherhood.org to check that all out, or you can check us out on social. But come, we can't wait to see you in February.
We want to meet you in person. Please come.
Welcome to the Intentional Fatherhood Podcast, where we give you a strong biblical framework and lots of practical ideas on how to live intentionally as a father and a husband. I'm Brooke Moser.
And I'm Justin Whitmore Early, and we're your hosts to guide you through the many roles and challenges that God is calling you to live intentionally as a father. We're following a visual framework that you can check out at intentionalfatherhood.org, and it's going to help you break down fatherhood into 8 callings.
And in each one, we're going to talk about how God made you to be a father and what practical habits you can start trying today in order to live intentionally into that call.
So come along with us as we follow Jesus on this journey towards being more intentional fathers.
Welcome back to the Intentional Fatherhood Podcast. Today on the podcast, we're joined by Ruslan KD. Ruslan is a creator, commentator, and former Christian hip-hop artist who has become one of the most trusted voices at the intersection of faith, culture, and really the whole internet. He's the author of a new book, Godly Ambition, Unlocking the Full Potential of Your Time, Talent, and Treasure. And man, this is a great book. I encourage you to get it. Through the Ruslan podcast and his daily content, he actually reaches hundreds of thousands of people every month. He's a husband, he's a father, a leader, and a great hang. And excited to announce for the first time right here, right now, that Ruslan is actually going to be joining us in person at the Intentional Fatherhood Retreat in Costa Mesa, California, February 19th through 21. So if you have not gotten tickets, pause this, click on the link in the show notes, get those tickets now, and want to let you know group rates are live. Any men that sign up 5 or more get a discount. So check that out. Lastly, if you could rate, subscribe, or even leave a comment on the podcast, that would be so helpful. It really helps reach more fathers. So enjoy today's conversation with Ruslan KD. Welcome back to the Intentional Fatherhood Podcast. Today, Ruslan KD.
First outdoor podcast.
First interview. You are the first interview.
Man, I was going to make an inappropriate joke, but I caught myself because we're on talking about fatherhood. Fathers have self-control.
Oh my gosh. So anybody even scrolling the podcast space is going to know your name. They're going to see, like, dude, I've heard this name. I've seen this name all over the place. But YouTuber, huge in the music scene, now an author. These are all the boxes that we talk about really quick to help people know, like, what you're about to say is not wasted. It's beautiful. It's lived. It's from a lived experience. But welcome to the show, man.
Thanks, man. And thanks for having me.
And the outdoor podcast space is fun. We're out in a spot, an event together, and we are outside.
We're outside, as the kids would say. Literally outside.
And we're holding the mics.
We're doing it.
Dude, just released a book.
Yes.
Godly Ambition, Why It's Okay to Want to Do Great Things for God. I want to talk about that for sure. And it's really sad. We have to be honest. Like, I called Justin and texted him. I was like, bro, so Ruslan and I are in the same space. I'd love to do this interview, but it's like really hard to think about you not being there in that space. How do you feel? He's like, I'm gonna regret not being there, but you got to do it. Have the conversation. So he's here in spirit.
He's here in spirit. But I call out to Justin.
Yes.
You guys are in California. You got to stay. And then we could do something with all three of us in person, not just in spirit, Justin.
Yes.
So don't play me. I know the event you're going to. I'm not going to name drop, but I know.
We'll all three be at the same place. So we'll do it.
Yes.
That'd be real fun. But dude, this all starts with the story. So dude, before you're a YouTuber, which people heard about this in the intro, and now an author in this space, a speaker, you're a father, right? Mm-hmm. You're a family man. Give us like a little background, a little taste of, you know, who you are, who your family is, kind of what your day-to-day is when you're not doing all the kingdom stuff.
Yeah. Ethnically Armenian,
yep.
Born in Azerbaijan, just north of Iran. Azerbaijan is a Muslim country. Armenians are culturally Christian.
Yeah.
That caused all kinds of tensions. Eventually, me and my family and 500,000 other Armenians were ethnically cleansed from Azerbaijan, Baku, came to the United States right before the fall of the Soviet Union and communism.
Yeah.
Subsequently, my mother and father split up. So I grew up in a single family home. Mom's, you know, addicted to alcohol and very toxic men and struggled a lot as a kid, got arrested at age 11 for breaking into houses, which is very embarrassing till this day. My mom still thinks that I wasn't actually breaking in the house. I was just looking in the window. I sold her on that tale.
says a lot about you.
Yeah, she still believes that till this day. She's like, remember when you got arrested for looking in a window? I was like, I wasn't looking in a window. She still doesn't. She still thinks I was just looking.
What a sweet mom. But I mean, as a mom with her son, she wants to believe the best.
She wants to believe the best. So yeah, I had a pretty tumultuous childhood, man. And then it kind of all culminated to in high school meeting a girl, her wanting to see me over the summertime. I wanted to see her over the summertime. The only way I could see her is if I went to church with her and her family.
Yes.
Even though I grew up in the Armenian Apostolic Church, that was my first time like really hearing about Jesus. And I kind of wrestled for the next 2 years. Me and her were in and out of relationship and breaking up. And then I was dating Jehovah's Witness girl. And just this is around the time of 9/11 and all that stuff. And then so it took me 2 years of wrestling with God, with apologetics. Is Jesus God? Is he just a God? All the questions. Like I needed every rock turned. And then finally gave my life to the Lord. I say like the beginning of my junior year. Got going with like teaching Bible studies and leading and all that sort of stuff. But like there was no conversations. Like I knew like read the Bible, cool. Like go to church, got it. Stop looking at porn, got it. Don't sleep with your girlfriend, got it. But there was nothing to help me walk that out practically. Yeah, there was no, what I describe now in the book as like the law of replacement. Mm-hmm. It's like you can remove and purge sin. You could take the weeds out of the gardens. You can kill the gophers in the garden, but you have to replace it with something better.
Yeah.
And that wasn't really communicated to me, man. So like I unfortunately ended up wrestling and struggling for, you know, a decade as a Christian with porn and financial issues and just in a pretty rough spot. And long story short, in the process, got married. And it was really like, when I became a father 6 years into marriage that like my life got in order. Mm. You know, we were able to get out of debt. We were able to start saving. I was able to, I was working as the media guy at my church. And then I transitioned to being a full-time artist, you know, at 2015. But yeah, I would say I spent the first like decade of my life as a Christian really struggling. And it wasn't because there was bad theology taught. The theology was great. It wasn't because I didn't have community. I had a great church. Mm. It was bridging it into the practical, like the supernatural and how do we make that super practical? So that's kind of what I do now.
Yeah. Now tell me about, you've been married for how long?
17 years.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Yes,
I think she's the one.
Well. Dude, you said that's right. I said that this morning. I died laughing. A couple guys missed it. I'm sorry. It was great.
No, my wife is great. 17 years together, 21 years. So we're at that phase where we've been together longer than we've been apart. So outside of the facts I gave you on this, you know, podcast, I don't have many sentient memories before her. You know, she's kind of just always been here.
And how old are your kids?
Levi is 10. Yeah. He's awesome, man. So Beyblades. Minecraft, Star Wars.
Yes, that's the best age, man.
He's going through Chronicles of Narnia.
Oh.
Watched the movie, now he's going back.
Okay,
reading the books. Zoe's 4, going on 14. She thinks aren't she's grown. All, she thinks they? All of my friends are really her friends.
Yeah,
and so like Forrest Frank will come by the house, and she'll talk to Forrest like that's her
like
homie.
That's her boy. She probably loves his music.
She's like, "How's Forrest doing?" And I'm like, "You don't." That's my friend, you know? Like, what are you talking about? So she really thinks she's going. Then we got one baby boy on the way due in November. So super excited.
I didn't know this.
Yeah. We don't put a lot of personal stuff online.
Wow.
Yep.
Congratulations.
Since we're on the Fatherhood Podcast.
Dude, your life is about to change.
It's about to change
again. Yes. Okay, so I have so many questions. Congratulations.
Thank you.
That is a cool moment. How do they, I got to ask, how does your daughter feel about this situation?
She was not pumped.
Really?
She wanted a little sister.
Oh, yeah.
She was devastated.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I'll send you the video afterwards. She like legit cried for when we did the gender reveal. We did this little gender reveal science experiment my wife did. And my daughter like legit cried.
Right.
She was upset. It was a boy.
We have 4 kids. Our oldest is a boy. Then we have 3 girls. But we did a similar thing. We're like, it's the 4th one. We'll have the kids here. And similar deal, gender reveal. And it was a girl. And my son like literally just, he was sitting on the couch. And then he literally like falls back and just puts his hand. He's 16 now.
Okay.
So, you know.
He really wanted a little brother.
Oh, yeah. But he was like, you know, maybe 8 or 9 when this came about.
Yeah, yeah.
So he's like, it'd be so rad. I was like, dude, you'd be a decade older. Yeah. Like, it's not even, it's not like you're going to have a little buddy.
Yeah.
Nonetheless, a lot of ladies in our home. But anyway.
Congrats, man.
Yeah. But this idea of ambition, this new book that came out, I know that so many of the men that listen to this, so many of the men that follow you, and I think God's given you a gift to speak to the men of this generation. I really believe that. I think that's a lot of people that engage in the content of YouTube in a huge way. And I think this idea of ambition is beautiful, also misunderstood. Also, a lot of dads wrestle with what that means.
Yep.
And so, I wanted to have you on to just really actually, we have the long form in the book, which I say, everyone stop what you're doing. Go to the link in the show notes, get the book.
Yeah, and the audio of the book isn't very long. I think it's like you can get through it in like two or three hours.
Oh, that's great.
1.5.
Oh, yeah. Do you read it?
Yes, I read it.
Yeah, even better.
I have to.
Dude, I would never farm that out.
Oh, personally. Somebody's doing it. I roast him for it all the time. Like, why did you, what?
Why would you
read the book, dog?
Did you read it? And it's not that long. I mean, it probably took you, longer, 2 hours.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, like let's talk about this. So I'd like to kind of ask about that tension between ambition and godliness and what really shaped this book, because I think there's a lot of men that miss, like we think in a cultural Christian situation that chasing after things or wanting success or wanting to do well is actually opposite of godliness and wrong. Help us understand that.
Yeah, I think men just need permission to go after the things that they were hardwired to do.
Yeah.
And I think there's been so much talk on toxic masculinity. There's so much obsession with work-life balance. Now there's this, I would argue, unhealthy fixation on Sabbath. And by Sabbath, I don't mean take a day off, sleep 8 hours a day, spend time with your family. I mean like, I am going to turn my phone off for 3 days straight while I meditate in the morning sun and not talk to anybody. And it's like, dude, if you're in your 50s and you've worked hard and your adrenal glands are shot, like you probably really need to do that. But if you're in your 20s and you're just getting your life off the ground, like you don't need to turn your phone off for three days straight or 2 days straight. Like you need to take 1 day off a week and you need to put your head down. You need to work.
I have a question though on that. Do you think that comes from a version of idealism?
Like, absolutely.
We get into this idea, like, I'm going to have a Sabbath and then you got to like take it.
Yeah.
I'm going to have this idealized version. But I mean, anyway, I'm just asking that question because as we're talking, I'm like, I think there's a lot of guys that actually, it's a good thing made into a bad thing because we put it in the wrong spot.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I think like John Keith, who's a friend of mine, dropped this gem on me. He said, a Sabbath day of rest hinges on 6 days of hard work.
Yes, sir.
It's like guys that like are concerned about overtraining.
Yeah.
And they're I don't want to overtrain. And it's like, well you got to train before you overtrain.
You got to actually go to the gym
5 days a week, 6 days a week before you overtrain.
Tell me about this though. So with that idea, right? You're talking about dudes that overdo the Sabbath piece. Talk to us about like, what does ambition or godly ambition actually look like now in this moment, right? Because I think you're defining what it doesn't look like in some ways, but what does it look like? What's the permission that you can give the men listening? Like, dude, run after it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, I think when we look at the scriptures, which that's going to be my guidelines for everything, right?
Yeah.
There is a type of ambition that is absolutely forbidden in the scriptures.
Yeah.
And it's usually referred to as selfish ambition. Two words in our modern day translation, one word in the Greek.
Okay.
The Greek is edetheia. So it means a clobbering by any means necessary. Get after it, dominate other people, right? But there's also a different type of ambition that I think is actually echoed with what I talked about this morning. Jesus, the disciples wanting to be great, desiring greatness, and Jesus doesn't rebuke their desire for greatness. He had no problem with rebuking people. He rebuked Peter, he rebuked the Pharisees, he rebuked Judas, but he doesn't rebuke their desire for greatness. He redirects it and redefines greatness as service and redirects it towards being the greatest servant of them all, right? So I actually think it requires ambition to do marriage, right? It requires ambition to do fatherhood, right?
Yes.
It requires ambition to do home and family. All of that requires a sense of drive. Now, in the New Testament, there's a different word for ambition. When we see ambition in an NIV, and it's just ambition, specifically in 1 Thessalonians 4:11, making your ambition to lead a quiet life, working with your own hands, so you won't be dependent on anybody, and your daily life may win the respect of outsiders.
Yeah.
Paul said he makes it his ambition to preach the gospel where others haven't. And he also says he makes it his ambition to do what pleases God. So that's kind of the three pillars of it, if you will. that's type of ambition. It's actually, and I'm going to butcher the Greek, it's philotiomeia.
The fact that you tried is impressive. Yeah. Good job.
Is where the etymology of brotherly comes from. So like brotherly, like Philadelphia, the city of brotherly love. Yeah. So there's that. And then the timea is like the time. So the etymology of the word, and this is not me, this is Wes Huff, who thankfully was kind enough to break this down to me while he made fun of my Greek. It's a type of ambition that's a brotherly utilization of time well.
Yeah.
To say, what is the time, talent, and treasure I'm given? And how can I make the most of it, not to build my castle, but to build God's kingdom and also provide for my family?
Yeah.
And I think sometimes we're just asking the wrong questions. Like we're like, what if I become like too successful? And it's like, again, like the training, like you first got to train before you overtrain, right?
Yep.
Like you first got to be successful before you become too successful.
Yes.
And the standard, I think in the scriptures, and this is might be harsh for men to hear, is in 1 Timothy chapter 5. Paul writes, and he's writing about order in the church with regards to finances and resources.
Mm-hmm.
This is in the context of that. And he's talking about the widows, and he's saying, hey, there's certain widows that are young. The church, they just need to remarry. If they don't remarry, they're going to be busybodies.
Yeah, yeah.
Then there's older widows. And he says, now with these older widows, there are types who are, who have no one to care for them. The church needs to care for these widows. Yeah. And then he actually adds prerequisites to it. So it's interesting that there's prerequisites for charity from the church, which is a whole nother can of worms. But then he says the widows that have no family, they're supposed to be cared for by their, that have family are supposed to be cared for by their family. Mm. And then he goes on to say, for anyone that cannot provide for the needs of their family, specifically their immediate family, is worse than a non-believer and is an act of faith. That's really hard to hear. And that's not in the context of just providing for your immediate nuclear family. That's actually about providing for your in-laws.
Yeah.
Right? So we don't ship grandma off. Right?
That's got a lot of heat behind it specifically. Tell me more about that.
Well, think about it. Like outside of Western American culture, which I love the West and I love America, life is done multi-generationally.
Yep.
Right? Like your parents come to live with you when they're older.
Yeah.
You take care of them. You have a community of extended family that you do life with. Here we're hyper individualistic, and then maybe our wife and kids. But it's like no, it's broader than that in a Near Eastern context. Life on life.
Yeah.
Take care of your in-laws. Take care of your parents. Take care of your extended family. Paul's saying if you don't provide for them, and especially the immediate needs, you're worse than a non-believer and have denied the faith.
Wow.
So think about how much welfare issues and entitlements and government waste and spending and programs could be mitigated if every just Christian said, I'm going to provide for the needs of my family and especially my immediate family.
Yeah, yeah.
We're going to take care of our own.
Yeah.
Like think about what that would do to change the world. But that's a standard. That's what Paul's saying there. I think this is very uncomfortable to hear. So again, before we become over-successful, how about we just reach baseline? How about we just get to providing for our family and especially our immediate family? And that, I think young men are struggling. I think a lot of young married men are dads are like, man, this is hard. So again, you need ambition to do that. You don't need ambition that's going to cost you your soul or cost you your health, but you do need a framework of godly ambition to say, how can I get after it?
Oof.
Not at the expense of my family, but maybe at the expense of my comfort. Maybe at the expense of my pleasure.
Yeah.
Average American spends 7 hours a day passively consuming media on their phone.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So between Netflix, Hulu,
staggering, dude.
YouTube, seven hours. I'm not talking education and I'm not talking for work stuff. I'm just talking just chilling, consuming stuff. Okay. That's almost 50 hours a week. Right. What if we just chop that in half?
Yeah. Give 25.
And 25 hours a week you spent on developing yourself. Oh, no.
Oops.
Not breaking your iPad.
Not breaking your iPad. We're okay.
Developing yourself, learning new skills, becoming a bigger asset to the current employer that you have.
Yeah.
Right. Spending more time with your family, working on your health. Like all of those different things can be done if we eliminated some of these distractions. And the era with AI. And what's coming next, you talk about a disruption to the economy. We've already entered the era of the hyper-consumer and the hyper-creative.
Yeah.
Right? So either you're getting after it and you got a stack of cameras and you're building something and you understand how to leverage tech and all this sort of stuff, or like you're just passively consuming 50 hours of media a week.
Wow.
Like that's where we're going already.
Okay, so I got so many questions for you. Thank you for speaking to that. Take a drink of water. It's hot out here, dude.
It's
What is this? What is this place? Fathers, we are so excited to let you know of two resources that myself and Justin have been working on. First, Sowing a Hidden Seed, Daily Prayers for Your Child's Spiritual Growth, is available exclusively right now at intentionalparents.org or intentionalfatherhood.org. It is a 31-day guide to help you pray and focus with consistency on your family, your children, helping shape their hearts while God shapes yours. And of course, you've heard about it. Justin's resource, his new book, The Body Teaches the Soul, is available everywhere books are sold. This book is about the 10 essential habits that build a healthy and holy life, habits that strengthen how you lead your home. So we want to just encourage you, if you have not grabbed those resources and those are helpful, please take a moment, get those now, and let's get back to today's episode. I want to highlight this beautiful tension you're holding. So you said, and I love this, that you know, we're consuming this much media. I've heard the argument, because we're in the space of digital discipleship, so to speak, or commentary on, like, you know, I would put you in the category of, I'm not saying you're putting yourself in this category, but almost a cultural commentator, mm-hmm. of communicating, like, where's the truth in all of these things that are happening? I think you do a great job of that. Mm-hmm. And I know I've, just like many men and other people, I knew about your content and some of the stuff that you've been working through, and it's really helped me process mm-hmm. stuff. And I know I'm not alone. But in many ways, the argument I hear, so I'm gonna push it back on you and you can respond to this, mm-hmm. is, aren't you just adding to the problem?
Yeah.
Putting
yeah.
out, yes. you yes. know what I mean? Like, because people go, well, you know, well, he also consumes. So and they'll push this on, you know, on me too. So I'm curious how you respond to that.
Like, yeah, I have a section in the book of like, yeah, to some degree, every content creator is complicit in this,
yeah.
for sure. I say what gives me hope
yeah.
is that when I go live on YouTube, and this is just like a minor thing, but like, we actually don't have thousands of people that watch me live. It's actually thousands of tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands that watch the videos, but they don't just sit around watching me live for 5 hours a day like certain streamers, right?
Interesting.
So for me, the hope, and at least I like to believe, is that like, the videos you're watching from me, hopefully it's equipping you and sending you back into your real life
yep.
to actually live the truth instead of just hearing about truth.
Yeah.
That's what I'd like to believe.
Yeah.
So when we're doing a live stream, you know, there'll be a couple hundred people, but yeah. like, I'm not the biggest like draw on
the live stuff.
The live stuff. And that actually makes me happy, because that means that people are tuning in when they can.
When they can not.
And yeah. not like I'm stopping my afternoon yeah. and watching Ruslan for 4 hours.
Yeah, yeah,
right?
yeah.
Right. And so, yeah.
That's good. So that's a great response. Well, I think with every backside weakness like media consumption, there's also a beautiful side. Like, mm-hmm. people are being discipled in more ways than ever before.
Yes.
In information. You are not a passive dude. I don't know you, but mm-hmm. all I know is this. Most guys in your space are ambitious, mm-hmm. right? Like, you have to have, you're highlighting a certain level of ambition. Mm-hmm. Give me kind of like a window, like behind the scenes of what this process looked like. You've built an online platform. Mm-hmm. That doesn't happen on accident. You were successful in the music space. That doesn't happen on accident. You're writing a book. That doesn't happen. So what does that look like for you practically? I'm thinking like, and almost put on that space of like, you're a father, you have young kids, mm-hmm. you're actively still growing your family. You got every pressure on the familial side, but then you got this growing world on the other side. How do you hold all that? And yep. what does that process look like behind the scenes?
Behind the scenes, it looks like communicating expectations.
Okay.
About one, evaluating the season that we're in and what does God seem to be breathing on.
Okay.
Two, communicating expectations internally and within the household.
Okay.
And then three, when those first two things are done, then I, as a creative person, as an ambitious person, can run after the thing.
Yes.
Okay. So when we're getting the YouTube off the ground, it's the pandemic. So I already could.
That was shows. When you started it really yeah. kind of
well,
pushing it.
That's when it really kind of took
yeah,
off.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So we already, there was nothing to do. There was nowhere to go. I couldn't go anywhere. So I'm already home more.
Yeah.
And I absolutely worked very hard that first like year getting it off the ground. It was really yeah. just me up until 2021 when Zach came on. And there was kind of an understanding of like, yeah, the God's breathing on this.
Mm.
If this is great, because now Dad doesn't have to travel and go do shows and mm-hmm. and leave as much. And we're going to buckle down and I'm going to go hard. And that okay. might mean like late nights and
okay.
Really getting after it. And so, but that was a season. That was a sprint.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
For a season,
good.
Right?
That's good.
in Proverbs 6, it talks about the gazelle escaping the hunter, right? Mm. And it says, give no rest to your eyes. Now, I don't think Solomon is being literal, as in like, don't sleep, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I think he's being, I think that's hyperbole to say, hey, there are seasons. Sometimes they're usually on the back of making a mess, right? So when you're in debt and you've made a mess, you might need to get your head down and just get out of debt as quickly as possible, right? This is, a lot of this is from Dave Ramsey and the impact he had on us to get out of debt. So we understand internally that, hey, sometimes there's sprints.
Yep.
And sometimes we're coasting. And sometimes we're power walking. Sometimes we're not. Some, you know,
that's so good.
That was a season where we put our head down and we just worked. And it was on the other side of like, but there's nowhere to go and there's nothing to do, right? So a lot of family time and a lot of work time, right? No extracurricular activities.
Yeah.
And then we kind of ease up a little bit, right? Okay. We kind of ease up. Now we hire people. Now there's other people to do stuff right now, putting out a book. It's a season of putting our head down and we're going to work and we have a window and then we're going to have a baby, you know? And so
yeah, stuff's kind of slows down.
No more traveling after mid-October. I'm not going anywhere for 3 months.
Wow,
right?
Man.
So that's what I mean. I think people, men can sometimes believe that like their wives are afraid of them working hard. And I heard this from Ramsey and it's not that your wife is afraid of you working hard. It's that when you work hard, you don't communicate it's for a season. So she thinks this is the new
forever.
Normal.
Yes.
This is it.
That's good, dude.
Right?
Yeah.
And so versus saying, good. Hey babe, hey kids.
Yeah.
I'm going to be gone for 3 sleeps. Cause that's how they understand.
Oh, that's my kids too.
Right?
Yeah.
I'm gonna be gone for 3 sleeps.
Not the older ones, but
I'm gonna come back and then I'm gonna be gone for 4 sleeps, but then I'm not going anywhere for a while. I got a one in and out trip here and I got a one in and out trip here. And then dad's not traveling for 4 months after that. So like communicating that over and over.
That's so good.
And then why are we doing it? Well, daddy wrote a book and this book is helping people and I need to go and I need to tell people about the book and help people.
Yeah.
So when we are all on the same page, then I don't have this guilt and this shame for working hard.
Yes.
The issue is we want to work hard, but not communicate why we're working hard. We're not casting a vision why. We're not seeing what God is blessing and breathing on. And then that can create more resentment and frustration in a marriage and in a family.
Dude, that's so good. Thank you. So just to double down on it, communicate the expectations. That's so helpful. Because I mean, I'm guilty of that too, where we're so in it and you're building, you're pushing. And then you're like, where is the end? I think sometimes actually what I love about what you said, what I'm personally taking is very helpful in the moment. And I think it'll be helpful for those listening is that you're actually forcing yourself to also agree to the terms that this isn't forever, which is actually super important in my opinion for the guy that's working in an unhealthy way to deal with a deeper emotional issue, right? Like those guys, like we all can be prone to jump into a deeper amount of work to avoid the hurt or the real thing that we need to deal with. So I think there's multiple layers to that, which is beautiful.
And let me just add this.
Yeah.
While I'm in a busy season, I'm not in a basketball league.
Yeah,
I don't
go
to the gym five times a week.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Like I'm home. Like when I'm home. I'm home every night. Me and my wife watch shows every night. I'm there for breakfast every day. I do bedtime every day. So when I'm home, I'm home, right? And so I think the issue is we sometimes want it all. Like you want to go fishing and be in a basketball league and be in the bowling league and be in 3 Bible studies and charge at your business and be like, well, why was my wife mad? Because she never sees you, dog.
Yeah, I do.
Because you're freaking running and gunning. And so it's like, I'm not doing a bunch of extracurricular stuff. Like when I'm home. Me and my wife hang out every night. That's our time.
Yeah.
I do bedtime with the kids, primarily do a lot of the bathing and that sort of stuff. And so I'm home. I got nowhere to be. I'm not doing meetings. Yeah. I hate meetings, by the way. I think meetings are the worst. You know, I'm going to create a culture of just destroying all meetings. We don't have meetings. That's another thing. Like we don't do meetings.
So what do you mean by that? Say more. I love to know.
Do not do meetings. But we have a group text.
In business?
Yes, business.
Okay, so what does that look like? Because I think
talk about what we're going to do. There's a text message with clear communications and we do it.
Okay. Help me.
I don't sit around talking about the vision over and over.
So I'm gonna put on the other hat of like someone that goes, dude, you got to communicate your vision at least 100 million times, you know, for them to get it.
So, I'd say 90% can be communicated in a text or a voice note.
Okay. Dude, voicemails, I love them. Yeah. They're my love language. Yeah. My wife and I, when we travel, when we're apart, we don't call each other because we found that every time I call her, she's in the middle of something with the kids and it's like always disruptive. And they're like, can we see your face? I'm like, no, not right now. Yeah. I mean, you know, and we just voice memo and it's lovely. But I would just say to that person, like, give me like an actual thing instead of meetings. Give me like an actual to do from recently where you're like, dude, we didn't have a meeting about talking about what we're going to do. We just did it.
Yeah. Today we have Zach, who is my number two is on a hybrid schedule. So he comes in once a week. He's remote the other time. Chris, who's in the office today, there's a simple, literally Apple Notes to-do list for Zach. There's a simple to-do notes for Chris. We have a group text and we're communicating and just checking in on what needs to be done.
That's great. So you're not meeting about...
I don't need to hop on Zoom for 30 minutes to go over what needs to be done.
That's good. That's good. That's a very effective... I mean, I think...
Think about how much fat is... How much time is wasted in the fat of meetings.
No, I agree. Business, I'm trying to...
Or in a job. Here's the worst one. In ministry.
Ooh. Preach a little more.
We have a meeting about the week, the all staff meeting. Then we had a meeting about the meeting. Then we have a tech meeting. I then spent my entire Monday in meetings. I haven't got anything done.
I think the main thing that people need to take from this is stop having so many freaking meetings.
I'm not saying never have a
meeting. No, but I know what you mean.
If you're onboarding somebody, if you're collaborating, there's a new project, obviously you need to communicate, set clear expectations, all that sort of stuff. But yeah, anyway, so that's one example. People are going to say, one example of like, hey, I don't do that.
Yeah.
We try not to have any meetings ever.
Dude, you know what I like about what you're saying even in that moment? And truly, this is helpful. And I think I could not agree more that most men I meet, most families I meet, it's not that they even need to know the right thing to do all the time. It's just they need permission to do the right thing. I think even what you're saying there is so helpful. Just like give permission to press into like, you don't have to waste time.
Yeah.
And permission to actually step into that space of...
And here's a replacement for it. Yeah. Ready for it? Have meals together instead of meetings.
Ooh.
I take my team out to eat. We sit down. We eat. We eat dinner all the time, right? Yes. We do Rose and Thorn as a family.
Yeah.
So I don't need to have a family meeting or a staff meeting because I'm always actually with my people.
Dude, love it. Very helpful. Switching gears a little bit, but I think really important. The cultural commentating piece. Where did that come from for you?
I was a full-time artist.
Okay.
I had, by the grace of God, you know, I was making, I don't know, we were grossing six figures as an independent Christian rapper. This is before this was as prevalent, from 2015 to 2020.
Okay.
Around 2018, people started just asking me for my input on stuff and like, how do you do this? How do you do that? So YouTube was primarily just me giving marketing advice, trying to help other young creative people figure out how to monetize their audiences as rappers, as creative people. And that was a community that was formulated like 2018, 2019 of just listen. It was really music reviews and then marketing advice. And then one day I was on live and people just started asking for more insights and they had more questions for me about other things.
Mm.
And I started speaking into those things and then trying to tie them back into scripture. And I was like, well, let me just clip this and see how it does. And those ended up being the things that were the most...
Wow.
That resonated the most.
Well, yeah, it connected with people.
Though. Yeah. And in hindsight, I look back and I said, well, what have I been doing a lot of... Yes, I did a lot of time doing music, but I also spent a lot of time leading small Bible studies with men and leading small groups. And they would come in worried about the week and we would talk about current events and then we'd tie it into scripture and the Bible lesson, you know?
Dude, it's incredibly helpful. Anyone listening needs to check out your stuff, obviously. But I want to highlight something that you just did recently, which I really appreciated. If you've been on the internet and around any of the spaces, you've heard about the Forrest Frank and Corey Asbury thing.
Yes.
And man, what I love you did, I just want to highlight this. If you haven't seen that video, it'll be in the show notes. Go watch that video. Very helpful. But you brought them both in the studio. And what I loved, I love that you didn't take sides, right? But you just sat down and made a space for a conversation. I listened to that almost all of it. I don't think I made it to the end. But man, very interesting. And again, two dudes as well. You all three of you. Ambitious guys, right? Mm-hmm. Like you don't get to that space by just being passive.
Mm-hmm.
But all that said, you know, you set up a space to have conversation. I think you modeled in that moment and, you know, Proverbs is really clear. Let another man praise you, not your own lips. So these are my words. You're not asking me to say this. I think it's important to you gave an example of what it looks like to work out really hard things in a beautiful way and to talk it out and let these guys share. But I just want to ask from your vantage point, kind of sitting in the room feeling that, what do you think that does for godly fatherhood and manhood? What you saw in that situation, right? Because I thought it was a great situation that in the sense of how it was dealt with and other people think very many other things. But I'd be curious, what do you think that does? What kind of model or permission do you think that gives as manhood?
Fatherhood? Well, men aren't always great at conflict, right? Because it's like you are... We're hunters, gatherers, warriors.
Yeah.
And then you're like, well, yeah, but that like hurt my feelings. And I'm like, I can't fight you.
So not like, anymore.
I love Jesus. You love Jesus. That hurt my feelings.
Is that a cat or a bobcat?
That's a cat.
That's a cat. We're okay. Everyone, we're okay. We're outside.
I did see a bunch of like deer or something last
night. Dude, we are in a wild place. Keep going. Sorry to interrupt. They don't know how to deal. I was like, if that's an animal that's going to kill us, we must move.
No, I think we're good. So, so I think like conflict resolution
is not,
we're just not the most equipped to have that. I think just the way we're wired. And so I think like giving space to say, hey, like, man, this hurt Forrest. And like, okay, maybe he's sensitive. Fine. Okay. Yeah. But if Forrest was in your small group and you said something that hurt his feelings about an actual traumatic event he had in his real life where he thought he may not walk again, he may not be able to hold his son again, I think you'd probably apologize, right? Regardless on how successful Forrest is and regardless on how he made a record out of it, multiple songs, and they were number one. He's still a human, right? And to Corey's credit, like I didn't have to convince Corey of this. Like Corey's very smart and he's a great dad in his own right and was like, yeah, like I sinned against you in this way and I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And I thought it was a beautiful picture of reconciliation. And especially in light of everything that's happening now with culture and society, is like, I think we need examples of reconciling healthy dialogue. This hurt my feelings. Maybe I'm soft, but still this hurt my feelings.
Yes.
Can you not do that anymore?
Yes.
You know? Like that's fair.
Yeah.
You know,
what do you say about all the, like in your opinion, because you have to, you live in this world, you think this, you know, you're in it every day. What about all those folks that are on the other end of this saying like, dude, that was like deforming of masculinity. It's all about the feminine culture of men having to act this way. I don't know if you've heard any of this rhetoric, but that idea, like basically saying that's an example of the effeminate Christian culture that we're in. Mm-hmm. What are your takes on that?
I'm putting
you on the spot.
No, so. I think there's some validity to like an effeminate component to manhood in church. I think a lot of our songs.
I agree.
Yeah. Are very like, feminized, they kind of sound like love songs to Jesus. Some of Christian culture is effeminate, you know?
It yeah,
and,
absolutely.
And so, yeah, I think there's validity to that. Now, is it effeminate to say, hey, man, like, that really bothered me? And, like, I know it shouldn't bother me.
No, not at all.
Like, that bothered me, dude. Can you not do that?
Yeah.
I don't think that's effeminate. I actually think that's masculine to say, hey, man, this bugged me.
Agreed.
And by the way, let's be honest for a second. Forrest is very influential.
Yeah.
And in having influence yields a lot of power.
Yeah.
And if he really did want to be malicious and dunk on someone he felt like harmed him or hurt him,
he
could.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't be good for whoever's on the other side of that. And he didn't.
Yeah.
So to me, masculinity is restraint.
Yeah, dude.
To me, masculinity is vulnerability.
Yes,
now,
sir.
I get it. We don't want to always be vulnerable because that can be toxic too. But I don't think that's what Forrest said. I think Forrest like got tired of seeing dozens of videos making fun of him breaking his back. Like,
dude, I get it. I mean, I get it in the sense of the frustration. You said about the, you know, the effeminate part of the church, which it can lean towards. I also think that comes down to, and I want to hear your thoughts on this, like that can come down to the fact that for so many, I don't know how long, right? But decades upon decades, men not being men and stepping into the space of spiritual leadership, spiritual authority. And I'm not talking about obviously male and female leadership, right? There's different views on that. I'm talking about fathers in the home stepping up to actually be the men that they've been called to be. So my question is like, how can we call men up to like fathers in the home? Like, you know what I mean? And another maybe add on or just maybe to sprinkle this a little more. What does that, in your opinion and estimation and experience, spiritual leadership in the home look like? Because I think it's more simple than we make it, but I also want to hear some of your thoughts on some of these things.
Yeah. You know, I think when men feel like they're being told to do stuff, sometimes it can come off in, hey, do stuff that is very foreign and unnatural to you.
Yeah.
And sometimes we should do stuff that's foreign and unnatural to us, right? Yeah. So if like you have little girls and they want to play with dolls.
Yeah.
And my daughter's four.
Yeah.
Like, I need to get on the ground and play with my four-year-old.
Yeah,
that's very foreign and unnatural to me.
Sure.
But it is good for me. It is good for my soul. It is good for me as a dad. And it is good for her as my daughter. Other times, though, I do think that men are told to do things and they think like, hey, man, like you need to have community and fellowship. And what they hear is like, I need to go to coffee and sit and talk to my best friend the way my wife does.
Yeah.
And like, I don't think that's what that's how that looks. Like, I think, hey, you need to go and have community can be like, you need to find someone and like go to the gym with them and like have a dude that you work out with, do the thing. So when we, when if we reorient it like that for a second and we go, okay, so like I need to be a present father.
Yeah.
Yes and amen. That does not mean that like I need to take my son out to daddy daughter day at Chick-fil-A the way I would do my daughter.
Yeah.
That actually means I need to be interested in what he's interested in.
Yes. Yes.
And then I find it interesting. Like I went back and watched all the Star Wars with him. And now I like, oh, like I get it. I never understood Star Wars as a kid growing up. I never got it. I thought it was nerdy. I'm like, I get it.
Yeah.
And in that, we also have really profound conversations about, I know, how is Star Wars different from the biblical worldview, right? And how is the Force different from God, right? Like we end up having really profound, and he's 10. Like we're having these conversations about Eastern mythology and other religions versus Christianity. It's really profound. And so like, I think that we hear that and we go, oh, you got to do something you don't want to do. When in reality is like, actually the things that you kind of like doing as a dad are the things that are good for you to do.
Hmm.
Playing video games with your kids, watching movies with your kids, fighting, wrestling with your kids, going on walks with your kids, doing sports. Yes. We actually like doing all those things. So I think some of it just needs to be reoriented and saying, hey,
that's good.
The things you like doing, they like doing with you.
And they're valid. Like watching movies with my, I love watching movies with my kids. They'll be the first to say like, that's one of our things that we do. And we absolutely love it. Right. So, I think there's just, in closing, I want to ask you just a few things, but one thing I really want to ask you is, what is your favorite thing as a father right now? Because that changes, right? As a father, you have all these different things, different seasons of life. What's your favorite thing as a father right now?
My four-year-old is developing so quickly.
Hmm.
And she's always, I think she's pretty articulate for her age. Like, I think she's more articulate than my son was when he was her age.
Sure.
So it is just such a joy to do the very simple things, like being there when she wakes up and letting her wake up and I'm there. And the cuddles in the morning.
Yeah, oh, I love
it's
that
like
time.
Those little things, being there when she goes to sleep, right? Like all those little things that I think like just talking to, just a conversation with her and like, man, like a year ago, you weren't as sentient.
Oh yeah, yeah. Not even close.
And now you're a human, like you're there.
Especially girls, man, they go fast in the communication space.
Yeah, man. Yeah. And so that has been very sweet and she's very sweet. And so even affirming her, like my wife is Black, my daughter is obviously half Black. And so like even affirming her and like the texture of her hair, you know, it's like a lot of girls want straight hair because that's what their Barbies look like. And so like even like affirming her, like, hey, no, like your hair is beautiful. Your hair is awesome. That's like how many cool ways you can style it. You can make it an afro. You can make it, you can comb it down. You can put braids in it, right? So like those little things I think are just, they're fun. Like it's fun to know that like my voice matters a lot in her life.
Yes.
Yeah.
If there is also one last question, if there's one thing that you could say to yourself, right? Like 10 years ago, your son's 10, like give a piece of advice that you would want Ruslan a decade or 15 years ago to know around the arena, parenting, fatherhood, any of it.
Considering that like I don't mess up the space-time continuum and don't have the kids I have now.
Sure.
Okay. I probably tell the 10-year, the version for myself 10 years ago, I probably would have told them like, have kids sooner. You'll figure out the career stuff because kids are an amazing motivator.
Yes, they are. Sir.
And there becomes a tangible desire. And if you have, we have the value of like, hey, my wife's going to come home with the kids.
Mm-hmm.
That's a huge value for us. That becomes a tangible motivator to like figure out your life.
Yeah.
And we think that that gets in the way of godly ambition and it doesn't. It actually is the jet fuel of godly ambition. Sir. It's like when you know why you're working for something and at the same time, you know you can't run yourself into the ground because you have people depending on you.
Yes.
You got to sleep. You got to work out. You got to get your 10,000 steps. You got to be functional as a human to be able to be present as a dad, love your kids, and get after it. When you know those external motivators of a family are there, you can do more with less.
Yes.
You can accomplish more with less time.
Yeah.
And then you can be more efficient. And I think I didn't understand that. I thought kids were going to derail and slow me down. And if anything, it's been nothing but the opposite. And I would tell myself, my 30-year-old version, you know, have kids sooner.
Wow.
Yeah.
Couldn't be more happy with this conversation. Thank you for spending time. anywhere books are sold? Is that where we can buy it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Amazon, Barnes & Noble. All the places. All that good stuff.
And your channel, Bless God Studios.
Yep.
What? Where?
How Ruslan many KD is the main channel.
The main channel. And then you got Bless God Studios. Yep. How many channels do you have?
So we technically have three.
Okay.
Well, technically four, but there's a small music channel and I'm trying to get it synced with my music releases. But yeah, Ruslan KD is the main channel. Just cracked 800,000 subscribers. I don't know when this is coming
amazing.
Out. At the time of this recording, Bless God Studios is at like 320,000.
Amazing.
And we have a small Bless God business channel that we're kind of trying to figure out what is that going to be called.
Great merch. Go check out the merch, the whole thing. Yes. Ruslan, thank you for what you're doing in the world. Thank you for just taking a minute to pour into the fathers in this space and the people listening. And dude, continue this work. It's really beautiful. You're blessing me and many people. And thanks for taking a minute.
Appreciate you, man. Thanks for having me.
Yep.